This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome back, listeners, to Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 439. Here we are as 2019 slowly fizzles. And who are we, you ask? Well, you're in for a treat. Obviously me. But you do have Phil dialing in from up north. Hello. Say hi, Phil.
Hey.
That's the quality contribution that only Phil can bring to the show. And making sure the proverbial train leaves the station on time, it's Super Steve in the bunker. Hey, Super Steve.
I can't believe it's episode 439. That's 100, more than 100 episodes since we've been took over this here podcast. Yeah.
It's hard to believe. I would have thought they just kind of pile up, I guess. Intrepid co-host Kevin WWX is off fighting the Yeti. We're hoping that...
No, he let us down again. That's what happened.
No, Phil, we always lie and say that whoever isn't here is doing something dramatic, so it sounds better. But we're hoping if he can defeat the Yeti in time, we can patch him through. The warrior shall remain. Anyways, where were we? Indie Comic Book Noise 439. Well, what is this? Indie Comic Book Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network. You can listen to all kinds of great shows. We always give a little thanks to Derek because he's a great guy. And he's the founder of the Noise Network. You can also hear other great shows, like maybe Marvel Noise, right, Steve?
Right.
Never heard of it.
And Steve is the head of Marvel Noise, so it makes it all fun. But anyways, Derek has his own shows, everything you want. Go check it out. Indie Comic Book Noise has a website where you can get past episodes. Obviously, wherever you're getting your current podcasts, sometimes limit the number of episodes. So I always tell people, check out IndieComicBookNoise.com. We also generally have show notes there that I painstakingly type out. But sometimes we have to forego the show notes to get the episode out. We also have social media presences on Twitter, Facebook. We have individual Twitter handles as well. We as you heard from the warning at the beginning, we do sometimes have a little salty language, but generally we're friendly folks. I like to think, I mean, once in a while we get into it with each other, but we're not like out trying to get clicks whatever.
You won't hear language born of hostility.
Yeah, we're not trying to gin up fake you're like, oh, how dare you, sir, and all that. Like, we're just here talking about books. But we also do, the remit of the show allows us to talk about anything that's independently comic book related, including media tie-ins, movies, video games.
Porn.
It takes a lot to offend us, basically.
Television. And even sometimes properties that are big two related. We always like to point out the classic Batman and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles crossover. And I also, although I have cooled on the artist editions quite a bit, I feel like the logistics of storing them have made them somewhat intimidating.
I just drew up some plans to build a box. I'm going to build a box and stand it up like a little, like, remote bookshelf kind of funny stand kind of a thing.
Do they not have spines?
Almost like a mission table. You know, like those thinner mission tables, but this one's going to be long, sticky outy because I need something for those twice up ones. Those are the really tough ones, Andrew. It's like the 11 by 17 page ones. Yeah, they're a little bigger because of the hardcovers and everything, but the twice up size ones, like the old EC ones and those couple of Kirby ones and stuff, those are really challenging. You got to put them flat.
Well, my trick is I leave them in the box they come in, which again adds another couple inches, but I feel like fairly well packed that way. But then I just have this arm. I mean, you know, it's literally we're getting to some pretty serious weight when you stack all those together.
It's true. But that's the thing. I want to be able to get at them, though. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want it. My stuff isn't a museum, you know? Like, you can walk on my grass. Yeah. Toys are meant to be played with. Comics are meant to be read and looked at. Books are meant to be pulled off the shelf. So when you got that weight, I mean, that used to be the problem with all my long boxes. Like, how do I get to the third one down with, you know, three on top? It's going to, I'm going to have to start moving stuff and like singing a railroad work song while I do it or something. But I solved that problem by making shelves for my boxes down here in the bunker. But those twice up artist editions, they need their own box. So that's my mission. After Christmas, I'm going to do a little cutting, a little sanding, a little nailing, and come up with something.
And then you're going to make a box for your... No, I agree with you. My solution was short boxes, first of all, and drawer boxes. Drawer short boxes. I do have a few long box drawer boxes and one or two generic long boxes, but I'm a big believer in the short box as someone who one day will die being piled under a bunch of comics. I just feel the short box logistically moving it around. And I mean, if you have a permanent space where you're like, this is just where it's going to live forever, that's fine. But we don't have a ton of space, so things sometimes get moved around. Plus, the short boxes work great in the closet. I took that top part for my, you know, nice shirts and all that, suits and all that. Then the bottom part, the short boxes fit in nice. I got like 9 of them or 12, something like that, a nice little cube back in there fit. And I can access them because they're facing.
Yeah, and I don't have any of those drawer boxes, but I would guess that the shorter box makes for a more functional drawer function.
Yes, I can. Yeah, the long box drawer is a real chore to get anything deep in, but the short box ones, I don't know. I know I've preached this endlessly, but one time I was screwing around with a long box and tweaked my back a little bit, and that's when I decided, you know, these are way too heavy. Because part of it is I'm also just lazy. Like, I know you're supposed to get down, bend with your, and all that stuff. And, you know, sometimes you're lazy, so you're just kind of horsing it over. And then you're like, oh, that hurt my back.
Yeah, we're still men. We're going to try to muscle our way through things and end up hurting ourselves.
Well, it's more just a matter of time, to be fair, in my defense.
Phil, what do you do with all your old books?
Well... all my trades are in bookcases, but my comics are just in white boxes right now. But I want to get rid of all the ones I'll never read again and then have all my other ones. And I haven't really figured it out yet, but some way I can read them easy. Mm. But yeah, I'd like to get rid of at least a quarter of my collection. But I switch slowly to trades now, so
yeah,
just bookcases for me.
Well, you just need to convince Kevin to show up and be your broker selling all them books off. I ended up giving a big, like, 600-700 this year just to the library, just for breathing room. Well, there isn't much, unless I sold a few, but the work, unless it's like your gig and you're buying a table or a box, getting somewhere regular, it's just nobody wants the effort of, like, packaging up a couple of comics, unless they're valuable. It's not, I don't think it's worth, not that my time is that valuable, but it's more valuable than making, you know, $3 an hour by the time I've packaged it and wrapped it so it doesn't get hurt and all that stuff.
How receptive, well, Andrew?
I was just going to recycle my shitty ones and stuff.
I would say check with the, I mean, obviously the porn comics are a problem, but I had to go to a couple different branches, but strange enough, the one closest to me was the most receptive, because I talked to the youth librarian. I'm like, even if you don't put them out, they make good gifts for the kids, or they can use them for art projects, you know, like the Free Comic Book Day ones. They can just cut those up and make collages, or what, like, they have some value. I just don't have the storage and the wherewithal to liquidate that, but it seems a shame to let kids play with them.
How receptive was the library to taking your Scimitar and Omaha the Cat Dancer trades?
Well, on the plus side, knowing that Comic Spectrum, a.k.a. Bob Breetal, is around, I can unload all my weird, obscure, dangerous comics on him because he doesn't care. So it's really, like, out of that, it was probably like 70% Marvel, like 20% indie, and 10% DC or somewhere in that range. So it was really mostly, and most of the indie were things, you know, like Image or Boom or the big guys, not like the crazy, dirty comics or anything. Yeah, those I went and screened out. Like, I'm not going to give the library some
prison pit.
Son of a bitch.
So what have you guys been reading?
I've got, Phil, do you want to go? You want me to go? What do you want?
You go first.
Okay. Now, we've got...
Why am I a special guest?
Well, because we don't get to talk to you enough.
That's true.
We've got Vault, Black Mask, Image, or Mad Cave. Or a comic about Gwar. What do you guys want to hear about?
What's a Gwar?
Gwar is a rock and roll outfit.
Oh.
So let's talk about the Gwar comic. This is just one I randomly...
Oh, those are those ones in the masks?
Yeah. I randomly saw this just on... There's no number or anything. It's just Gwar and a picture of the band. It's a black and white book. The copyright's 2019, but one of the dates in it is 2016. So this may be previously collected material. Gwar is an outfit out of Virginia. And this is written by Michael Alshanker, drawn by Lou Longo, lettered John Hagman. They had a small break in pop culture in the 90s when they were... they had one of their albums, America Must Be Destroyed, had a few hits on MTV. I think they might have been nominated for an award or two. They were making some daytime television show appearances. Back then, there were daytime talk shows that would always have whatever the latest scourge was, video games or rock music. And because of the conceit of the band is they're wearing big outfits and have lots of bad special effects where they cut off a rubber head and blood spurts out of the top. But it's very extremely not realistic, not only in the quality of it, but like it's basically a hose attached to it and it'll shoot gallons of it out that would not fit within the confines of, and you can see the hose running. It's a fun celebration, let's say. And I think it's interesting that they're still an existing band and still touring, although they've peaked, I would say. Because I looked when they're coming to my town and they're playing a pretty small venue. I'm like, oh, it's interesting that they still hang out, you know, having started in the 80s and then now going this many years later and a lot of the original members. But anyways, so the conceit is they're these crazy outer space monsters who are stuck on Earth. And they're going to create mayhem and mischief. So the other bizarre thing is obviously they're people in the mass. And Gwar has always had that duality where they'll talk about kind of the fact that it is people in the mass sometimes. So the book has half of it is like a biography of the band where it talks about the members and their names and who joined when and everything. And that part was interesting. And then the other half is like the cosmic monster that comes and they're going to fight. So I don't know enough about the band, to be honest, to say if the information is accurate or not. I do remember when the guitar player died. Well, I've seen him back in the day. I haven't seen him in, you know, 20 some odd years. But back in the day, I saw him a few times. And I remember a few years ago, the guitar player died and the lead singer died like a year later. I mean, they've since, you know, gotten replacements and all that. But it's kind of sad. But I don't know. Just it's always been a weird artifact into my youth. And I particularly enjoy the choice to go black and white. But obviously it's post the death of the singer Dave Brocky in 2014. But there was a 2016 date that made me wonder if this was some collected thing. But apparently it's Rock and Roll Comics. And they do biographies of all these different bands and little comic book versions of them.
Yeah, that was in the late 80s, early 90s. I remember getting a bunch of those, a Zappa one and a Grateful Dead one that predated when they then did the Grateful Dead comics that Tim Truman did a bunch of the art for.
Yeah, and there was a Gwar comic when the band first came out. Obviously, there's some artistic influences, but they do dedicate it to the lead singer who passed away in 2014, Dave Brocky, as I said. And if you're a fan, I mean, obviously, if you're a fan of the band, you probably are already aware of all this stuff. But for me, it was a fun grab of something, you know, a look into the past and done in the same tongue-in-cheek way where they're out destroying the universe. They're the scum dogs of the universe. But, you know, obviously extreme violent, somewhat offensive.
Seems like an odd one for me to pick up.
Heads being chopped off. But it's done in... It's so over the top. There's no possible realism to it. I mean, and I certainly see how people can be offended or whatever. But it's not done in any kind of way where anyone would be like, oh, that's a real thing. Like, it's clearly a bit.
Well, if the Wu-Tang Clan can do their whole, like, Tolkien-like world comic books, you know, back in the day, then Gwar can do unrealistic stuff, too.
Like, next time he's going to be covering the insane Kyle Posse
comics. Right?
These are, I would say they're in the same... I don't... But there was always a fun... Well, I can't always say a fun... I feel the music in the 2000s kind of shifted more to the kind of overly affected vocals and sped up. Like, the earlier stuff, I find, while it's still hard, has a more humor. I find that kind of overly processed thing where you can't understand anything of what they're saying, and it's just kind of fast, sort of death metal-y stuff. Can be okay, but it's not... I prefer the older, more... having an obvious laugh, and I don't need to read the liner notes to figure out what the hell they're saying. Because, you know, I'm an old man.
Hmm. Can I direct you to Archie meets Kiss?
Kiss meets the Phantom of the Park. Yeah, so basically they're like a low-budget Kiss is a great example.
Kiss is definitely the rock band with most credit.
Yeah, them the dead.
But, yeah, so that was my first entry into the lot. Either of you boys got anything you want to put on? I got more I can go to, but I don't want to hog the spotlight now that I have a rare chance to talk to Phil and Steve.
Well, I was lucky enough to receive somewhere in November, I think near the end, the third and final volume of Voracious.
Excellent. Which, I remember picking up that one issue. Yeah, yeah. I was at a show and saw the guy there, and I was like, whoa, Phil turned me on.
The second volume ended with a note how they're not going to be able to do it the third and final volume, but luckily they ended up doing it. They ended up coming straight, which is great. And it ended amazing. Like, you know what makes me really sad, though, is because this is a small company, Action Lab, here's this amazing, amazing story, probably, like, definitely in my top five, I'd say. And it's just going to be lost in time. Like, not everyone's going to get their hands on this story. And in 10 years, you know, like, well, I guess because it's digital, it's a little easier now. But I don't think, I feel like this is one of those stories that should be in everyone's hands.
I haven't read it yet, but I was exposed to it and have digital copies because Comixology, and I've seen it since then too, seems like they frequently put those issues on, like, they're some of their sales and stuff. So yeah. I've seen them promoted, or, like, you know, you get the first issue free and then the other ones are, you know, were reduced or whatever. But I remember scarfing them up on one of the Comixology sales and have always meant to get around to checking them out and haven't, but speaking of them fondly makes me want to get into them.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my top series for sure. And it wraps up perfectly in the three volumes. I can't really talk too much about the story because I don't want to spoil any of it. Just because it's, like I say, a must read. But it's just, I don't know if you remember when it started, though. It was about a guy who got a time travel suit and he would cook up dinosaur and sell it at his diner. But then it takes a bunch of crazy turns along the way. And
what could go wrong?
Oh, well, not too much. No, a bit, actually. Yeah, quite a bit. And it's also a great story about family and stuff like that. But it's a great sci-fi story. But yeah, so I read those, and also I picked up the Four Seasons of Strain, you know, the Del Toro and Chuck Hogan one, based on the novels.
Uh-huh.
It's like vampires. They did three novels, and then there was six volumes of the comic, and then there's also four seasons of the TV show. So I started reading the comic to get ready for the TV show. It's the artwork's not the greatest, but it's by David LaPam and Dark Horse. And I like him as a horror writer. I like a lot of his stuff. And I think he does a pretty good job. I never read the novels, though. But I'm excited to dive into the TV show for that one. But, yeah, that's about all I've read.
Well, I recently joined Voracious, Phil, to help convince Steve. I haven't read the third volume yet. But at your recommendation.
Oh, you read the first two?
Yeah, yeah. I remember him quite a while ago. I took him on a trip somewhere. Remember I was reading.
Yeah, I knew you read the first one, but I don't think you read the second one too.
Yeah, I thought I like it. And I always I think we've talked about one of the things I like about Action Lab is how they'll sometimes take the single issues and have them bound into trades.
Well, that's all their trades, except for this new one. They don't have they didn't do that. But yeah, every single Action Lab trade—that's what they do.
Yeah, so you smart. Get the so you get all ads and the letter pages, and it's fun.
But you get some gutter loss, I think, though.
Yeah, you know that's a big pet peeve. I mean, when Andy stitches his own homemade comics, see our talk of Mike Grell, the Sable book that I stitched a bunch of them together. No gutter loss if you stitch it right in the middle of them. But I think you can't do that with a machine. Like, I hand-sew them together. So.
Yeah. But Action Lab's been around for a while now. Like, they're definitely out of the small companies. They did pretty well. There's not a lot I read by them anymore, though.
Well, you're just waiting for Ginger Dead Man number volume 7 or whatever.
Well, I still read Bat Blade. I enjoy that still. And then, other than that, though... I think that was it. That's it right now. But yeah, another Ginger Dead Man, I probably.
All right, Super Steve. The spotlight turns.
Dun dun dun. You know, Heavy Metal Magazine has their like comics division that they every once in a while prop up and do a few projects with, or they adapt a bunch of European stuff and not even publish them physically, but just put them on their digital storefront. And there's a lot of good stuff there. I
love Heavy Metal.
Just checked out, reminding me of the nostalgia of the old Heavy Metal animated movie, the first one, the good one. There was a 4-issue Tarna series last year. That this year was collected into a trade, and which is affordable at $10 for the 4 issues, which is great.
Yeah, I picked up and the first issue and talked about it on here because I remember Tarna is a chicken dish also at a local place here, and it made me hungry the whole time reading it. Anyways, go ahead.
There's a couple of issues that have covers by Alex Ross, and a couple of issues that have covers by Louis Royo. So, I mean, that's just seeing those pieces alone is worth the price of admission. But the story is by Alex DeCampi, who we've, you know, seen make the rounds, better known for some of the, and like the horror type stuff, I think. And the artists are Esau and Isaac Escorza. And I'll mention the colorist, too, Carlos Cabrera, because the coloring tone... What it reminds me the most of this art is almost like some of the Mike Choi stuff from the 2000s, whether it was for Top Cow with Witchblade or Marvel with some of the X-23 and Mutant books. It's almost an animated color, like an old rotoscope animated color palette, but the line work is really fine and not very thick. Like, there's not a lot of blacks, and it just leaves for a lot of color gradients, and which in the wrong hands could really be a hot mess. But here, it I think it actually enhances what I is probably average to above average artwork and makes it into something that actually is really nice to flip through. This is a good looking book. And if you remember, Tarna was the armored, well, not very armored, sword welding, tall, booted, white haired warrior who was the kind of the main, kind of brought all the stories together from the first heavy metal movie. She's the one that defeated the evil at the end that slowly had been building throughout all the different, different installments. And she rides the big chicken. You know, it's like she's riding something from the old Joust video game from the 80s. One of these, winged. Yeah, almost. But here she's, she gets a little more clothes than, but not when you first open the book. I got to say, there are boobies. But this is a totally different environment. They set up Tarna almost as like a legacy character who just appears when she's needed in different times in the future to fight demons. And then when her job is done, she disappears and reappears somewhere else. And here we get like one mission that she had to accomplish. The other thing that's about her is she's mute. So there's not a lot of dialogue to read here. You get right into the story. You follow right along. She's not pontificating. She's not moralizing. She's just kicking ass or silently being pushed around until she's in a position where she's got to fight. And this is a futuristic environment where there's a city that's been being sieged by these demon monster hordes, and the people are being beaten back, and they're just throwing anyone on the front lines. And Tarna appears here inside the city and hooks up with a couple of young teens who get dragged to the front lines with Tarna, and she experiences a lot of battlefield horrors. And eventually puts down the gun and picks up a sword and starts lopping off heads. Pretty fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed the one issue I read. It just the food. You can't name your character after a very tasty piece of food, or Andy will end up spending too much time thinking about how hungry he is. Dang it, food. But I think I have some good news. I think I might be able to patch in our missing compadre. We're going to see if it works.
Alakazam! Peanut butter sandwiches.
We all have to get around and chant for what? Kevin.
No rain. No rain. No rain.
Can we summon the whirlwind? I think we may have summoned the whirlwind, listeners. You may be in for a treat. Busting into the middle of the episode. It's Kevin. Hello?
That's the whirlwind.
Welcome aboard, Kevin. Glad you are here.
Indeed.
You'll have to catch up in your own time. Steve just filled us in on Tarna, which we had mentioned briefly before, but he had read the entire thing.
I don't know what that is.
Glad to see you pay as much attention when you were on the episode as when you were off. It was a book from Heavy Metal. But anyways, now that you're here.
As long as it wasn't a Richard Sala book, that's all right.
I thought you were forbidden from remembering his name.
I don't know who that is.
Exactly.
One of the originals that I bought from Sala was in his last pinup book that came out. I was psyched. It's like, oh, that's cool. He thought highly of it enough to publish it.
Yeah, I like that you can get his work at an affordable rate and full color. Should I go, Kevin? Do you want to jump in and put a book on the table, or should I pick it back up?
Well, maybe you've already covered this book.
Let us know. I doubt it. I'd love to see Kevin pull the guar.
Just try us. Did you read Heart Attack?
I did read Heart Attack. This is Image Comics, Sean Kittleson, Eric Zawadzki, Michael Garland. I was unfamiliar with the team. I just thought it had a cool cover. It's got the Heart Attack with the little EKG type as the A in Attack. And it's got these two people holding hands, blasting their power.
Yeah, it has the classic cardiac move.
Kevin, were you familiar with these creatives or the people or anything? Or why'd you pick it up?
I have no idea who these people are. I mean, that's fine. Yeah, and then also that's the other move on this cover, right? When you hold hands, and then but we've seen this creeped up in other comics by other publishers.
For sure, Wonder Twin powers activate. Even that in too. Cartoons.
That's a bit of a, I don't know, the cover kind of gets ahead of it, ahead of the story.
Do you want to set the stage for the listeners of where this book takes place?
I'm not quite sure where this book takes place. And it maybe the future? I'm not sure, because they make a reference later on, and I'm like, alternate reality?
Well, I will say, while they throw us right in, they do have some back matter, which is likely also sort of in the cadence. I would put it about maybe 5 years out, because a significant alteration separates them from us, and that is the creation of mutant variants. Sorry.
Wow. So maybe it's the Ultraverse. I'm not quite sure.
So a genetic procedure allows for a group of people to be randomly bestowed with powers. But for the most part, they're not significant powers. They're more just little, like, oh, you can make lights or sounds or things like that. Nothing that where you're, like, blowing apart blocks or anything. But as with all these books, whenever you have mutants or variants or deviants or whatever, you obviously have the attending discrimination. Because we can't let those filthy muties put us out of business.
This is true.
The other twist, and why it's similar to our world, is it's a hyper-vigilant state. So lots of police cameras everywhere on the streets. I mean, not too much advance of today. There are some cities. I believe London is crisscrossed with traffic cameras and everything. And it's also the characters that rebel against the police and this discrimination use a lot of whatever the social media of the day is. So it's a big deal to get a good influencer and someone who has a lot of traction on social media. And that's where a lot of the confusion about the language, and I don't really understand the mechanisms, but you get it. Yeah. You know, like, this is the hot young Instagram star, except it's not Instagram. It's, I don't remember what they call their thing. You, Kevin?
No, not really. But anyways, they use some slang and stuff, yeah. And I'm like, is that their thing? Like,
so it's meant to be a bit heightened version of what we have now, where their influence is even greater than it would be in today. Like, there is no, you know, regular media, it seems like. It's just all these kids doing these different channels of free bodies, I guess, is the thing. So you have
freebooters.
The group rebelling against the cops, and some are doing it openly, in which case you can get arrested, and some are doing it, and so we have a series of these influencers trying to rebel against the system, but also get views, likes, clicks. You know, the same thing we all do here. Now we're shamelessly hustling on social media.
Wow. I don't know if doing this podcast is the correct thing to get likes, views, and hits. And funny enough, you tweeted that thing because you read this, right?
Well, it just came across my feed, and it made me laugh. It seemed like it matched up with this, but it just made me laugh. That, like, for those of you that don't follow me, I tweeted a Wired magazine did an article about how in today's real world, social media influencers can make like $50,000 to $100,000 just to put the product in their shot. Like, they're doing their little vlog, like, oh, I woke up today, and if you put the can of Coke or whatever on the desk, like, they can make a ton of money just putting it, not even talking. I mean, they can get more if they talk about, oh, I love drinking Coca-Cola or listening to indie noise. But then we would have to pay them like $50,000 to $100,000. It was just fascinating. But that's existing now, and that ties in with this, where you have a whole career of that. But anyways, our protagonist is one of these rebels.
Not those rebels. Or those.
She's an X-Man, let's say. Because we don't know her group. No. It's
the free group. Yeah, at one point I thought this was going to get like pretty bleak. And I guess it's more of a tranquilize rather than like some explicit fill you full of lead. We're going to show every part of the human body type of situation.
One stylistic thing I really enjoyed is the artist's team has decided to make the people kind of strangely proportioned. And I really like
it. I noticed that. Yeah.
Like almost everybody has this kind of, they almost look like bigger, like they're not super short, but pretty much on their way. And they have kind of interesting proportions to them. That's really hypnotizing. Like I haven't seen a book like this where they made that decision. So it's interesting. Like everybody's like that.
It's just a little off. It's weird.
Yeah. Well, I liked it. But anyway, so there are two plot lines. One is a relative newbie is rebelling against the man. And the other one is a woman who is well into the influencer culture. And so the woman is, you know, politically battling to get more views and clicks and all that. And the young newbie guy just wants to do the right thing. And they're on the cover. And so when they end up meeting, that's when the woman realizes that when they team up and touch each other, her powers get massively increased. Like I said, their powers are normally really wussy. And suddenly she can blast people. I mean, I assume all the powers. I don't know. Maybe I'm... Kevin, what was your take on this world? I don't want to step all over your review.
Yeah, you don't really see any like, big-time, like, superheroics and everything. And it's weird that they're public, but they're, like, it's not... Like, you can become a celebrity and all this stuff. It seems like, and you're, like, hawking your t-shirts or whatever you're doing. And, like, that's fine enough. But I guess there's not a... I guess they don't have maybe what would be... I don't know, like, a radioactive man or what. Like, they don't... I'm thinking there's nothing, like, super dangerous. I mean, it doesn't really have to be as soon as you're different, like, they seem to crack down, so. But if there was something really dangerous, then, you know. I mean, the story would probably be going in a different... I guess, or maybe the story is going in that direction, right? Now that...
Yes. Well, that's always been the... What's made some of the traditional versions of these stories more interesting is that... Well, in the real world, the X-Men would be hugely dangerous. Like, they can alter reality and read, like, the... suspicion and fear and everything is a lot more understandable. Where here, if all they can do is kind of light their hands up or create little sparkles, it's hard to imagine them as some kind of big bad. Like, it's literally party tricks they can do.
Yeah. And or so, then I was wondering if they can drug you or something. Isn't that what she's like? What did you do to me? And not realizing what had actually happened.
I think the when they link up there was that. He tried to dose her, like, at a club. Like, put some in her drink or something so he could take advantage of her. Because when she first touches, they don't understand the connection. She groks to it pretty fast, though. I don't think he ever figures it out till the end.
Yeah, I don't think so. But I thought that's another thing that you could do as a low-level type of power.
But it certainly doesn't seem just... The police... Like, in the beginning, like, shoot this woman who has the power to light up her hands and seem... I think we're meant to understand that the reaction is definitely over the top, given what they can normally do. But you're right, now that she has a much greater power, she can, like, Magneto this situation. But are you going to keep up with this book? Where are your take on it?
I see nothing preventing me if I wanted to keep up with it.
Does normally your shop not allow you to buy certain books? No. After you buy the first one, they're like, we're sorry, Kevin, we just don't think you can handle this.
No, I've actually seen it. What? I forget when this came out. But I know I've seen it. I'm like, I didn't pick up on the first week. And then you mentioned it, and I was just like, yeah, maybe I'll check that out. They had a few copies, which is good or not good. You know what I mean? You're always trying to judge the, like, did they over-order or they under-ordered or there was demand? So that's why there's, you know, I'm trying to, but I don't know. I thought, oh, there's actually a few copies. Well, weeks later.
One thing that helps is being skybound. I would imagine that Kirkman has learned his lesson and does sufficient print runs. I mean, look, if something gets super hot, you're not going to keep up, but I don't think they're really underprinting to trick things. What I didn't really get to was how Heart Attack really related to what we saw in the first issue. Like, I guess their powers, maybe their powers can stop your heart. Like, the title made, to me, little sense based on what we saw in these first pages.
Yeah, the title definitely makes you think of something else. They're giving people heart attacks?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Oh, maybe they don't have a lot of power, but if they touch your chest, they could, you know, defibrillate you or make your heart stop or something. But that's not suggested at all in the book. So I don't know if I thought it was just a cool, like, name for a comic. Or if it's, like, to be revealed later. Like, oh, heart attack. Because, of course, that way. But I do love, like I said, the odd proportion of the figures is enough for me to at least get to the second issue. Like, I'm pretty, I think that's a pretty cool decision. Like, do something weird like that. Comic
something weird.
It really, any kind of odd choice, I feel like it helps stick out. And you're competing on the shelf space. Those guys at Marvel are going to have like 80 issues that week. DC's got a pretty good stack. You got to do something to get the eye of the consumer.
I mean, there was more of this than 20XX, I think. Which is not a Mega Man comic. I know, vastly disappointed that in the year 20XX...
That one looks pretty cool to me. But I was... Because it kind of reminded me of... the Sword of it.
All right, that sounds pretty good. Super Steve or Phil, you guys want
to? I got another one to throw at you. I had it on my shelf for a while, but I finally popped it open and really enjoyed pouring through it. It's a hardcover reprint of a, I think it's from originally from like 2000, I want to say. 8, 7, 6, around right around the time he got into the comics business, and that's Raphael Grandpa's Mesmo Delivery.
Oh, wow.
I haven't thought about that in a long time.
Yeah,
from Dark Horse Books. Makes a nice little, hardcover here that was from. Let's see what year the hardcover was, because wasn't that long ago. Well, I guess it was a while ago, 2014.
I have the soft cover,
but
it has what a great has French flaps on it.
Because great think it was little from, one-shot story.
Maybe Ad House Books or something.
That makes sense. It's that type of work for sure, and it is just the story of like what seems like just two bumpkins riding in a delivery truck through middle America, and they stop at a truck stop, and the one guy's kind of like an old smart schemer type guy, and the other guy's the big hulking boyish face, seems more like a simple type of guy. He goes into the rest stop to go to the bathroom, and encounters a bunch of tough guys in there trying to impress their middle America truck stop girls. And fight breaks out. And, I mean, the way Grandpa illustrates any type of, whether it's organic beings or backgrounds, it's interesting to see two pages taken up just of a guy walking past a group of people sitting at a booth in a diner, going and taking a leak and coming back and zipping up his fly. And Grandpa makes it, you know, flow and makes me stop on each panel and look at everything. And it's just great fun indie art in the same family as like a Basil Wolverton or a Stokoe or all that types of really hyper, like Darrow, hyper detailed, yet still really kinetic and able to convey movement type art. And after things go bad, the big guy ends up getting knocked out and the little schemey type older guy comes out with these blades and starts slicing up everybody around. And then there's a little bit of a, like a Twilight Zone, O. Henry-ish type of ending as to what they were really carrying in their truck and what this whole delivery they're on is all about. And then it just quickly ends. But what, again, the beauty is in the journey, the framing sequence of the crow with a tooth in its mouth flying in, flying out, the blood and guts and baseball hats, and there's a cutaway scene of the truck stop or gas station stop that has, it's just showing one of the guys dragging a few chopped up bodies, but they do it as a cutaway showing underground, and underground there's like a big Satan like demon like wringing his hands and like licking his chops looking up like, all right, some more souls coming down my way. This is the kind of fun where it's almost like you're looking at an old Fillmore East poster or something that would have been from the underground comics movement, or a Rick Griffin, that kind of stuff, a Gilbert Shelton. This stuff is a lot of fun.
So little comic work though.
Yeah, well, it wasn't what he set out to do.
I mean, you get some stuff here and there, or like a cover or something, but I'm like, oh, man, I could definitely go for some more.
Yeah.
Well, I can talk about a book that I think we mentioned briefly on the way in here before we started this, and that's from Black Mask. Steve, did you get the Space Riders?
I love the Space Riders.
I thought for longtime fans of the show, if you go back to episode 401, I believe that's when we spoke about they had a Space Riders Galaxy of Brutality that was like the first series. I don't remember if they're related, but I think that's the episode we talked about that. That was same artist, but Fabian Rangel Jr. was the writer.
Yeah, I met one of the Space Riders.
Giffoni is the writer, but it's still Alex Zirit. So this is Space Riders number one. Not to be confused with Space Riders Galaxy of Brutality, but very similar. Anyways, Steve?
This is Space Riders Vortex of Darkness, and this is the third Space Riders series. There's a trade of the first one that's already out that I have. There's a trade of the second one that was solicited, but I don't think it actually ever hit the shelves, if I'm not mistaken. And then this is the third series that's just starting in single issues. And Zurit's art is like looking at a multicolored black light, black velvet poster from the 60s or 70s. Yes,
the black light
so good.
Feel. And
page kind of after page.
Like a Johnny Ryan meets Stokoe kind of. With the sort of, but just the wonderful colors and images all run together. For me, it's more the art than the story, I would say.
This is what's awesome about comics, though. Is there a story? It's cool. But the colors are flat, which I just love. And there's not a lot of gradient stuff happening at all. And the colors are gaudy. the color schemes and the thing, colors that are against each other, fluorescent pink next to yellow, black next to, or, you know, red next to white. It everything really pops. And like, this is what I love about comic books, that you can just throw this stuff together that just wouldn't work in any other medium, except maybe, you know, one influenced by psychedelics.
This is why comics are better than TV. Reason number 1032.
Yeah, the coloring is similar to the X-Men Grand Design, too. I feel like that same kind of perfect, like you say, flat colors all paired against each other. And sometimes they'll have the white be like super white.
And he's not afraid to color like a whole panel one color, or have the whole foreground be one color. You know, they use time-saving techniques that colorists in the past used that there's no reason to use now, other than to just give you that little bit of nostalgic touch while he's blowing your mind with the hyper-violent, crazily designed, armored beings that populate the book.
I would say it also helps make the figure pop, though. Like, if the figure's the only thing and it's all just a pink background or whatever, I don't know. I feel like that helps. It's not just time saving. It's a, I acknowledge it as a cool storytelling way to be like, I want your eyes on here. Because they have other panels that have all kinds of dots and squiggles and background and everything. Yeah, I just feel like it's a mix of, and then those panels I feel like set off nice, because you kind of go over all that crazy detail versus the ones where it's just the guy and a plain background.
And I tease about the story. This is a setup issue. It's kind of a bringing the band back together. The old gunslinger who put down his guns gets called back in for, you know, can't let his past life escape him, or the police detective or sergeant or whatever who put down his gun gets drawn back in and called for one more job, kind of thing. And the villainess is a sorceress who used her skills to call forth Satan and seduce him. And then while they're doing it, at the moment Satan's distracted, giving her his O-face, she grabs his sword and lops his head off, and Satan is no more. And she takes on some of his power, and then she calls forth a bunch of minions who end up tearing each other apart that are like godlike beings. So it just populates this world, this futuristic cosmic world, with some big bads on a supernatural level. And it's off to face this threat.
Yeah, I didn't really pay that much attention to the story, I'll be honest with you. That's why your joke hit home with me particularly well. It's like an album, like a heavy metal rock album concept or something. Come to life. Kevin, you said you met one of the space writers?
Yes. I got, of course, this is, everyone's going to be like, of course you did. Baron Zemo.
Nice. Oh, he would do a great. Did he color it or just give you the?
Yeah, like the whole deal at TCAF, like the whole markers and everything was awesome.
I need to see this.
Yeah, because he's not afraid of pink. We've seen.
Yeah. So it seems, and then he was like, looking through, like, I'm like, of course, like a TCAF definitely bringing reference material, right? So he was looking through some old, like Thunderbolts or that like Minus One issue, and then he was like looking at like the Techno the Fixer and stuff, and he's like, I like what's going on with this guy and everything, making some comments about some of the stuff, and I was just like, yeah,
I'm nervous. That Comic awesome. Arts LA is this weekend. I don't know if I can I can go back. I don't know if I have it in me to brave the art comics crowd. They can smell it. They can smell the superhero on me.
You just have to navigate the scene well enough somehow.
All right, I got one more book for you. That's a new book that's on the stands, and it's an Image book. I can't go through a appearance on Indie Comic Book Noise and not mention an Image book, it seems. So this is Jerry Duggan, writer, John McCrae, artist, and Mike Spicer is the colorist. And this book is called Dead Rabbit.
It's back.
From last year. Oh, I know. I'm going to get to that in a second. So first I thought, oh, Dead Rabbit. Andrew would love this book, right?
Ooh. Yeah, and why? Then, I did not buy it exactly for the title.
Oh. So there's one issue, and it's the story of a masked thief. He's a rob. He's like a bank robber. He pulls heists. He robs from the mob. He robs from the banks. And he's masked and has red X's for his eyes. This is kind of his signature look. And the story is in the modern time, but they're talking about how we haven't seen this lawless individual operate since like the late 90s. And it's kind of like a whatever happened, where is he now kind of a thing. But the reader gets shown where he is now, and he's just a regular dude, and he doesn't have any much money left. He's living with his wife, who looks like she's had a stroke and is wheelchair bound and dependent on him to help feed her and cook meals and things. And she thinks they're doing okay money-wise, but truth is he has been returning to his old ways because money's getting tight again. So he's dipping back into the world. And the legend, because, again, the further away you get from the time that the thing actually happened, the more of the mythology can build up around it. The legend is that he went out and retired after stealing like $10 million from the mob. So much so that even some of the guys from the mob think that he took $10 million from them, but he never did. But they're after him, and when he starts popping his head up again out of his little rabbit hole, then they are like, hey, let's try to get this guy. So he gets back on their radar. So you're halfway rooting for him to get the money that he needs for him and his wife. And at the same time, you're biting your nails because the real bad guys, and they're really bad, are trying to find out who he is. And it's getting more dangerous for him as time goes on. So the first issue ends, and then that's it from last year. And a couple of months ago, a book from Jerry Duggan and John McCrae and Mike Spicer comes out called Dead Eyes, referring to the X's on his eyes, right? And the first issue is the exact same first issue of Dead Rabbit, but all of the rabbit references are taken out, and now they've substituted it with eyes. I guess the rabbit, advocacy groups.
They came
the rabbit
to their
lobby,
senses, is what they did. Now I can read it.
Exactly. The rabbit lobby heard that Andrew wasn't going to be able to read it.
Exactly. That he refused to read such filth in his house. Well, you know the real reason, right, Steve?
No.
There's a bar. It's like the oldest bar in New York City, or one of them, that's called that. And that was the... And they're like very, very she-she. They came out with like a cocktail book that's very... I'm going to offend some people. I think it's super pretentious. Like, the ingredients are all these, like, things that no one... Even, like, you'd have to be real out there to have all these radical things in your kitchen. And that's kind of their shtick, is, like, this old-timey cocktail bar. And I was like, eh. Because I flipped through the book to see some of the recipes. And like I said, half the ingredients are things I've never heard of. And it's not like I'm an expert or anything.
Well, this book is much better, I gotta say. Well, it's cool because it's John McCrae art, and he's not afraid of drawing crazy, hyper-violent type stuff. So when somebody gets hit by a board with a nail in it, it really looks like somebody's getting hit. You know, it's close to like a Tom and Jerry catastrophe happening. So it's well drawn, and McCrae's a really cool dude. Like I said on the last Marvel Noise with you guys, I spent some time hanging out with him and chatting at the pub at the hotel in Baltimore after the con this past year at Baltimore Comic Con. And he's a real funny dude to talk to, and it makes me like his artwork even more now that I get a sense of his sense of humor and his sensibilities.
Well, now they corrected the title. Maybe I'll check it out.
He did it for you.
Better. I'm one of the indie comic book guys. I mean, you know, not that I make or break.
You are.
But I'm here making it happen. All right, I think we've got a good little episode for the folks. Anybody got any final things to say before we wrap this up?
They didn't call it Dead Jackson.
They probably wouldn't have gotten sued if they called it that, actually.
No, it would be like Jax, like Jax Pacific, not like Jax.
Yeah, exactly.
Equal rights for variants. Right, Andrew?
Yeah, I'm all into variant covers. Remember I went on that rant about how it's good for your shop, so you know, I'm all on board. Variants. I didn't realize that till you said it, Kevin. You're right. Instead of calling them mutants, call them variants. How many variant covers were on that?
I kind of wonder. Story about they variants. Have some variant covers for this too.
You would have to. How could you not have a book with a bunch of people called variants and not do variant covers? Like I you're know. Leaving money on the table. All right. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in. We hope to keep going. Maybe sometime for the end of the year we'll have a end of 2019 retrospective or thoughts or whatever, but I don't know. I don't like having planned segments because I feel it's not indie, but maybe we'll do that.
Someone's building a segment.
I got more books to read.
I'm distinctly not building a segment, Kevin. How dare you? That's not indie, but if you guys have your catchphrases now, Kevin, I know you have a catchphrase.
Keep developing sentience. It's good for you.
Phil, do you want to note that you don't have a catchphrase?
Well, my catchphrase, yes, it's not. No catchphrase.
All right. Thanks, people.
Later.
Party, the new album from metal legends Gwar, their first album of new material in 3 years. Experience Gwar's unforgettable show this December. Go to Gwar.net for tour info. Gwar, the new album War Party, available now.